The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Well, I'm joined in the studio now by the Minister for Public Expenditure, Infrastructure, Public Service Reform and Digitalisation, Jack Chambers. Minister, you're welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Claire. Thank you.
So listen, you had a pretty abysmal weekend in the by-elections for Fianna Fáil. You lost your deposit in Dublin Central. John Stephens got 4.2% of first preferences there. And then in Galway, your candidate came fourth in terms of first preference votes. What went wrong?
Well, look, obviously we're disappointed with both of the electoral results there, but we're coming at a point of weakness in both of those respective constituencies. Dublin Central was our second worst constituency in the last general election. Galway West was, we polled below our average result across the general election in 2024. So I think what we had here was two new candidates, both who were just first elected in 2024 in the local elections, who were, I suppose, building a base compared to some of the more established candidates, some of whom got elected. For example, Sean Kine is someone who, I want to congratulate Sean Kine and Daniel Ennis who for running very successful campaigns and wish them well as they come into the Dáil this week. But look, we'll reflect on that. But I think we've used by-elections in the past as a platform of growth to continue to build a party for candidates who then progress into the Dáil. For example, take John Lehart in recent years, used it in 2014 to become a TD in 2016. Shane Moynan in 2019, then as now a TD from 2024. So, these were challenging constituencies for us in the context of our base vote on a very successful day in 2024, where we came out as the largest party in the Dáil and also the largest party in local government.
I'm sure, though, that you have read the commentary this morning with some of your own party members saying that Micheál Martin has turned Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael into the one entity in voters' minds. And that was borne out when we saw the transfer pattern in Galway West in particular, where the bulk of the votes for your candidate went to Fine Gael. Does that concern you?
Absolutely not. I think for some people, they were voting for a more centrist proposition in the context of, voting for maybe some like-minded candidates. I think that's, we have to respect voters' use of the transferable vote. When it comes to both Galway West and Dublin Central, it's about strengthening the organisation, looking to the future. We in Dublin Central, we haven't had a TD since 2007. We haven't had a councillor in the North Inner City for well over 10 years.
But that's a failure. Do you know what I mean?
Of organisation. And I think that requires a much greater resolve from us collectively within the party as ministers, as TDs, to strengthen that organisation, work with John Stephens and the local organisation to rebuild, identify candidates early to get seats in the North Inner City, so we offer a stronger platform come the general election. But I know, like, we've had challenging by-election results in the past where, when it comes to the national elections under Micheál Martin's leadership, we've continued to outperform many of the opinion polls and many of the expectations and the commentary in studios like this.
It's a hard one to take that Fine Gael managed to buck the trend, saying that government parties don't win by-elections. Fine Gael do. Fine Gael just did.
But I think if you look at their results, they had a much bigger reduction in their vote in Dublin Central, for example. It went from about 17% to 11%. So that was quite a big contraction relative to their general election result. They had an established senator, someone who was a TD on two previous occasions, a former government minister who I think had much stronger recognition across the Galway West constituency.
So it's a candidate selection failure, perhaps?
Well, I think it's, different parties have different strategies. And I think, for us, it was about, we had two new candidates, two relatively new councillors in both constituencies, and it's about building for the future. And I'm confident in the context of the strength of our wider organisation in terms of a future local or general election that we'll be competitive in every constituency. And it's about identifying where we don't have seats. Dublin Central is a constituency where we have, consistently performed poorly in recent elections in both the local and general election. And it was always going to be an uphill battle and challenge to compete. And we know voters obviously solidify around those whom they see as likely to win a particular election when it comes to a by-election. And that's why you saw, two or three candidates in both constituencies gain a significant vote share was less fragmented than we might see in a general election.
Okay, so people have raised questions now again about Micheál Martin, although it is being said that nothing will happen until the presidency of the EU is over for Ireland. Do you see that as being the case?
Absolutely not. I think there's strong and widespread support for his leadership. And we saw that at the recent Ardèche, the centenary year of our party, where I think there's widespread support for his leadership. And Micheál Martin was warmly received across both constituencies. In fact, I was canvassing with him in Dublin Central. He was canvassing in Galway West as well. And, you know, people are positive about him as leader of our country, as leader of our party, and as Taoiseach of our country, someone who is absolutely focused on getting things done, listening to people, and ensuring that we're a government that delivers for
people.
You're
saying that in the face of a really terrible result for Fianna Fáil.
I think there's sometimes overly simplistic analysis in connecting his, I think, positive work as Taoiseach with different dynamics that occur within by-elections.
Mm-hmm. But even your explanation,
I don't think it's a fair assessment. Yeah. Just to connect it to him, he's consistently across opinion polling shown himself to be one of the most popular leaders in the country.
Okay, so, but going back to what you said about Dublin Central, that you know that Fianna Fáil has been weak there for 20 years. Like that should have been sorted out long before last weekend. And that is a failure of leadership, is it not?
Well, but I think that's you're picking one constituency where we have been consistently weak versus the huge rebuilding work that Micheál Martin did when he took over the party in 2011, where we had one seat in Dublin. We now have 10. So, you know, he is someone who has rebuilt the party, rebuilt the organisation, strengthened our grassroots, won the local elections on successive occasions. You know, we're the biggest party in the Dáil, biggest party in the Shannon. And that's because of his leadership, his direction, his exceptionally hard work as someone who is trying to get things done as Taoiseach across critical areas that matter to people.
Listen, one thing that he said in the aftermath yesterday was that the cost of living has impacted hugely on people. That takes us directly into your area of responsibility. That could be taken to mean that there is a cost of living package on the way. Is there?
Well, what we're trying to do in the context of the budget is how do we better respond to the, you know, the challenges people have. But I think that it's within the overall parameters that we've set. So inflation is about 3% this year. I think it's better using the overall budget package to give people something back when it comes to, say, a personal tax package, putting money back into people's pockets and ensuring that a personal tax package is a central part of Budget 2027. I think there's shared agreement across government that we need to reward work, we need to reward workers, but we have to balance that against the need to protect infrastructure investment and investment in housing. So I think, you know, the public more generally understand that it's a careful balancing act about how much we put into day-to-day expenditure against protecting the infrastructure investment which will grow our economy and help build the homes and the infrastructure we need.
But there will be a tax package, is what you're saying.
There will absolutely be a personal tax package. It's a priority for Fianna Fáil in this budget. We had a good engagement across our parliamentary party where, you know, I know many workers going to work this morning, you know, are faced with a relatively high income tax burden, and we want to alleviate some of that in Budget 2027 and why it is an absolute priority for us.
Will you have to extend, will the government have to extend the fuel package, the 750 million that was put in place to end the fuel protests?
So what we've said there is in July when there's a, I suppose we'll assess the overall price dynamics in the economy and, you know, if there's continued conflict in the Middle East, we'll obviously review that and you know, we assess the policies that we've developed up to now. But it's important that across the different interventions we've made, that they're temporary, they're targeted and they're time limited. And that's why it's only at the point in time where they're due to expire where we can make an informed decision about that.
But it's a huge cost, isn't there, associated with extending that?
If these costs were to be made permanent reductions in the context of excise or other areas, that would have implications in our wider medium-term fiscal planning. And that's why we're correct in making sure they're temporary. But obviously, if there's a continued exceptional spike in energy prices, we're a government that's running the economy well, and we have fiscal buffers in place to be able to intervene, and that will take an informed decision at that point.
Okay, now, Eamon Ryan was in here last week. He's hopping mad over your infrastructure plans. He says they're going to ride roughshod over the climate action commitments that the government has signed up to. Is it a case of build these roads at all costs now?
Well, we want to get things done. And I think that the problem is we've got excessively tied up in bureaucracy, red tape and endless risk of judicial reviews. And I've taken, you know, a significant period of time to build the evidence base, what's working, what isn't. And I want to, you know, rebalance regulation. In certain instances, we've got a chilling effect coming from the courts where we've seen endless judicial reviews taken against projects. We had a Supreme Court decision on Section 15 of the Climate Act, which reflected, I think, you know, a very serious kind of subjective risk around the climate assessments of particular projects. And what I've said in the Critical Infrastructure Bill, which we're fast tracking, is that we're removing Section 15 for projects that are designated. So, for example, take the Galway Ring Road. Do we hand that over to the courts for an endless series of years in assessing whether it meets particular climate commitments, or do we build it and get it done? And there's multiple projects which are in the National Development Plan. Mm-hmm. We've made commitments to communities on building these projects. And my central focus in government is to build momentum around this. We've had a
but
strong...
Your ministers still have legal obligations to meet climate targets. So how do they do both?
So what we're saying is ministers have legal obligations within their overall sector. But to nitpick on an individual project and undermine our ability to deliver that, I think, is an excessive interpretation of climate legislation. It could mean that, you know, nearly every road would be restricted or undermined because of a particular climate assessment. There are communities in the Midlands, the west of Ireland, south across the board, where we have an obligation to build out certain road infrastructure, for example. That builds economic development. It allows for us to build more homes as well in these communities. And that's matched as well with a record level of investment in public transport. We want to ensure reduce congestion and alleviate the burden.
This was another point that Eamon Ryan made. Mm-hmm. He said that there are public transport projects that are ready to go, but what you've decided to do now is to plough ahead with your money into the roads and leave the other stuff on the back burner.
It's not the case. I mean, we have to sequence the commencement of respective projects. But I know for many people listening this morning, they've heard projects on lists for years. For example, the metro is something you want to progress and proceed with. A record investment by government in a project that's been sitting around for 20 years. We've got Dart West, for example, out in my own community, which has been on a list for multiple years. We want to get that going, get it started. We have other roads projects which we're looking at getting going as well. So there's tangible momentum across infrastructure delivery. We're Greater Dublin Drainage Project, because of the reforms that we've introduced, it's due for completion now 12 months ahead of schedule compared to what it was last year. The Waterford Wastewater Treatment Plant, 6 months ahead of schedule compared to what it was 1 year ago. And what I'm seeking to do is be pragmatic about the issues and the barriers which are restricting delivery. This will help public transport projects, it'll help the road projects, it'll help the foundations of infrastructure.
So where do we make up the difference then in terms of our climate action and our emissions? Where do you find the balance?
Well, we're taking significant action across multiple areas. So when you take, it's not all solely about like whether if a particular road is built in the next 5 years, that isn't going to be the single differentiator between us meeting our climate obligations. Probably one of the single biggest mitigators of our overall emissions profile will be our ability to get renewable projects delivered quicker in terms of offshore renewable energy. And the work that we're doing, I think, on infrastructure delivery and building out our grid quicker will help enable some of the offshore renewable projects to come onshore and so that we see the opportunities that will come from that, for example, in reducing overall emissions. Some of the public transport projects will help as well.
Yeah, we've been asked this question, which has just come in so many times. And now that I have you here, I'll ask you it. Why can't we increase the grants for people to retrofit and get solar panels? And we've had other people say to us, why don't they just allow everybody to get solar panels for free? Wouldn't that make a huge difference to the cost of living? Point one.
So Dara O'Brien has expanded the grants for windows and doors, for example. So we've broadened the criteria in which people can get retrofitting grants. It's not solely for a deep retrofit. There's been a more pragmatic approach taken to that. But we have to be, you know, balanced around the level of grants we can provide for.
But you're under such pressure when it comes to cost of living and in particular people's energy bills. Would that not be an easy win for the government?
Well, the overall price of solar panels has reduced in recent years. And there are grants obviously attached to people getting solar panels presently, but we have to protect some of the investment that's going into retrofitting. It is an overall balancing act. And Dara O'Brien has put a lot of work with the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland into ensuring we better deliver across the capital that we've set aside for this.
Okay, now you've levied, you and your officials, you've levied other government departments to cover this overspend in education. But there were reports over the weekend that the entire government overspend could be between 5 and 10 billion this year. Do you expect that will happen?
No, absolutely not.
Well, because the record isn't great. I mean, the record is 5 billion, 7 billion in 2024.
On average, in recent years, it has been around that number. What we've seen this year is obviously our overall plan across about 16 of the 18 government departments are on profile, where we've had an overspend is in education. And with that, I've introduced an expenditure levy where all government departments essentially will burden share and take collective responsibility for the reprioritization that we've made in education. And that helps moderate overall current expenditure. And I want to protect the economy into the long term, build greater fiscal discipline in government, but also have a better debate within government on how we've more efficiencies and reform within the overall level of spend. Because you're correct, in the last 5 to 6 years, we've had an exponential increase in current expenditure. People want to see more outcomes, better services from the overall increase. And that's why an efficiency levy, which is used in other governments across the world, is a way to have better delivery across the overall level of expenditure rather than it just being a debate about different government departments getting more.
And how have your colleagues at Cabinet reacted to this?
Well, they've all agreed to it. So we've had
agreeing to it and being supportive of it are two different things.
It forces greater reforms and efficiencies within government departments. And unfortunately, when there's people see surpluses and people see significant expenditure increases year on year, it maybe doesn't prioritise the conversation as much about getting more for what our overall spend is. And I'm conscious that if in a number of years, if there was an economic contraction, we would have to get more out of the overall base of expenditure. And that should be a standard discipline within the Irish government, within the Irish state, that we better deliver across the level of expenditure that we have in our economy. So that's why an efficiency levy has been introduced. And what we've done, there's been a marginal increase in health spending above profile. And in fairness, the Minister for Health and the CEO of the HSE are taking corrective action to moderate the increase in health expenditure this year.
So are all departments subject to this levy now, or have you exempted some?
We've exempted certain areas, but most departments are subject to it. So we've protected frontline health, justice and education because that's an important frontline service for people. And it's important to protect that area. We've also protected pensions and social protection spend and obviously housing and homeless services. There's a variation across the levy from...
But you haven't told us specifically what department is paying what percentage.
I have. I published that last week in a parliamentary question.
Well, Jed Nash has been looking for more information on this. Will that be forthcoming, or is there a reason why it isn't?
No, I've actually last week in a parliamentary question, I set out a table of what the percentage levy was across every government department. So I think it's less than 0.01% for for Department of Social Protection, up to about 1.4% for other government departments who aren't subject to health or justice.
But it doesn't sound like a lot in percentage terms, but it is a very significant amount of their budget, isn't it?
Well, it's if you take private sector organisations, they regularly would drive efficiencies much more than 1%. And I think people listening to this programme this morning would expect the Irish state to have more efficiencies and reforms in how we manage day-to-day expenditure. So I think this is the right thing to do. It helps us build greater fiscal discipline and manage expenditure into the medium term. And that's why, as I've said, across other administrations, which may not have growing economies and don't have the same fiscal space as Ireland, they do this as a mechanism to actually create opportunities to deliver new measures, where you drive efficiencies to actually do new measures. This is a useful exercise to build discipline, but also ensure that there's collective responsibility when we reprioritise expenditure.
What happens with, say, the Department of Health? It's 250 million at the moment. I mean, that would be where we'd be heading for a billion towards the end of the year if that didn't moderate. So what will happen with the Department of Health from your point of view if that happens, if they get to a billion over what they were allocated?
So what they've done to respond to that is they've restricted recruitment in certain health regions in administration and management grades in, I think, three of the health regions. And this corrective action to slow the amount of agency staff being recruited within the health system overall. So the new CEO of the HSE with the Minister for Health have taken positive and corrective action to try and moderate the increase in health expenditure. And actually, health expenditure was overall was actually falling from January to March. There's usually a spike in expenditure in January following mm-hmm. the Christmas period and for obvious reasons.
But Minister, if they need those people, they need those people.
Well, look, we've increased health recruitment by about 30,000 in the last 5 years. The budget has grown exponentially.
As has our population.
Absolutely. And but there are again, no area of the public service is immune from driving greater efficiencies and being more productive with the level of expenditure that has increased in the last 5 years. And we need to speak about that as much for people who expect us to deliver better public services. It's not all about how much more we allocate. It's a very simplistic conversation which dominates the Irish political discussion excessively, mm-hmm. where it's a debate on who gets how much more. It's actually about reforming how systems function, how they can better deliver for people who expect better services. Part of that is obviously improving headcount or improving the allocation in any given budget. But it's also about how we deliver better services for people. And that's why the corrective action being taken within the HSE, within the Department of Health, is about, you know, it's administrative grades, it's in management grades, for example. So they slow the overall increase in their budget.
A listener says, if health exceeds their budget for this year, as it does every year, will there be an even higher expenditure levy? As the parent of a child with special educational needs, it galls me that a country with billions to spare is making other services pay the price for my child's education.
Well, you see, this expenditure levy is for 2027. So that's in the context of an increasing budget. So our budget this year is 118 billion. It's due to grow to 125 billion in 2027. And it's government departments are absorbing a levy in the context of a growing budget. And essentially, it's helping government departments create the space for themselves to in advance of budget 27 to so they can maximise efficiencies but also improve service delivery.
But the question is, will this expenditure levy result in a reduction in services for people who pay their taxes?
Absolutely not. And it's about greater efficiencies in terms of how we deliver services.
Stop splashing the cash, you're saying, because the expenditure overruns were unacceptable.
I think that's sometimes the problem, like where we solely measure progress by how much expenditure might increase. And I would say to, you know, if whether it's in health service delivery or in other areas, it isn't solely about what more we allocate. Mm-hmm. It's about challenging the systems, the management within the public service.
You clearly believe that money is being wasted in this country.
I believe that we need to have a balance between how much more we give to an area and how productive or efficient it is in terms of the base level of expenditure. And that's why we're doing what happens across many other administrations, where we have an efficiency levy or an expenditure levy, where essentially we allow departments to create their own space by driving efficiencies in a budgetary cycle where they're getting more. So, for example, education spend went up 10% last year, excluding the increase we've given them this year. It'll actually go up by about 15% because we're a government that cares about special education. We want to provide school places for children who need them, particularly with increased special educational demand. And public services matter to me as a local TD in Dublin West and as a government minister. But I want to ensure that the level of expenditure overall delivers more for people. And that isn't about how much more we give to a particular area. It's about forcing reform and driving more efficiencies within the overall level of spend.
So your message to your colleagues in government is you spend what you get and you don't spend more or you'll be penalised.
Well, I think that's...
And your colleagues will be penalised.
Well, we have a budgetary process, and if we all agree to a particular allocation, and if there's overruns or there's new priorities emerge, it has to sit within the overall budgetary parameters. I think that's the correct way to manage the economy. It's the more sustainable and safe way to manage the economy. And it also means we protect the investment in infrastructure and housing. And it's protecting that investment is critical to Ireland's future, to build the homes, the schools, the the energy systems which will build growth and prosperity and jobs for the future.
You mentioned houses there, and we are going to be covering housing on the programme in detail later on this morning. We're also going to be touching on one-off developments, and we saw on the Sunday Independent yesterday this government push now, and it's going to Cabinet next month, for the rules around one-off houses to be loosened, the planning rules. Are you in supportive of that?
Absolutely. I mean, I know for many, many listeners, it's been a frustration where there's been huge bureaucracy and restrictions on one-off housing in rural communities for many years, where it's nearly very challenging and difficult for people to build a home where they may have grown up or where they want to live. And Minister James Brown has prioritised this. He's taken pragmatic stance to develop, I think, a much more balanced policy so people who want to build a home in a rural community are able to do so. And it's a much more balanced approach to, again, help people with housing. And it's not only about building more homes in villages and towns, but also ensuring that people who want to build a one-off house in a rural community can do so.
Yeah, but I mean, there are concerns around the cost of providing services and infrastructure to those homes. There are concerns around how it impacts our landscape, because often these one-off houses are very large, you know, bungalows or two-story homes. How will you safeguard against all of that, the negative side?
I think it's not going to be a carte blanche. It's going to be a more balanced approach to allow for more one-off homes. And
So you won't have to just be a farmer?
No, like he'll set it out in a policy statement around what the criteria will be. But it is to make it easier for people to build more one-off homes, which I think it's been very restrictive in Ireland for many years. And that's something, again, we're listening to communities, we're listening to people who want to build a one-off house to make it easier for them to do so. But obviously, it's not going to be a complete free-for-all. It has to be carefully managed, and it's a more balanced approach. Again, to listening to what people have said to us in rural areas.
Okay, Minister, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. That's Minister Jack Chambers.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.